Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Here with me today is Sid Finkelstein. He wrote most recently the book Super Bosses: How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. Sid is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. He's the director of Tuck's Center for Leadership. He's also a consultant, a speaker. He coaches executives and leaders on issues of being effective executives and leaders. He's written 8 other books, and I'm delighted to have him with me. I really thoroughly enjoyed Super Bosses. I learned a lot reading the book, and I'm delighted to have you on the show. Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you so much, Peter. I'm really happy to be here.
So, Sid, you wrote 8 other books, and you felt the need to write this one, a 9th book. And I'm curious, what was the drive behind writing this and the big idea behind the book?
So there are a lot of things that got me going on Super Bosses, but first and foremost is the work I've done in the past about failure. I wrote a book called Why Smart Executives Fail. And what I discovered is, while I had a lot of ideas on how to avoid those types of problems, I was missing something. And what I was missing was this idea that really the key thing to survival, to thrive as an organization over time, is the ability to generate and regenerate talent on a continuous basis. And it's that little insight that got me going to try to figure out, well, who's really great at that? How do they do it? And what I discovered is, and this is kind of the big idea, in every industry that you look at, you will find 1 or 2 people that are absolute giants in their track record of developing world-class talent. An incredible track record, superior people that are running the top organizations very often in that industry. And how does that happen is what I was interested in.
So it's interesting. What you're saying is, what makes me a great leader is if I'm able to make other great leaders.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Think about it. I mean, what is a leader? A leader is a person that helps create other leaders. It's as good a definition as you can get.
I love it. And in the book, you actually argue that what makes a great leader, in part, is not only that leader's ability to grow other leaders, but to say goodbye to them, to let them move on, to encourage them in some ways, even to move on to other things.
There are a lot of things that super bosses do that are quite counterintuitive, and what you're bringing up is maybe the most radical of them all. The idea that you can let great talent go and that's a good thing is something very few traditional CEOs think makes a lot of sense. And I've been kicked out of more than one office talking about this for proof of that.
Well, it's interesting because I actually had that conversation with one of my clients who's a senior level guy. He's actually a really fantastic boss. And I was sharing that idea with him as well as a few others. And he was saying, hold on, I've spent a lot of energy and a lot of money bringing this group of people together, and I really like them and I pay them well and they do really great work. I don't want them leaving and going somewhere else. I want them staying.
You might not want them to go, but when they're ready to go and when you've helped develop them to a stage where they're ready to take your job or run their own company, that's a whole other story. And then the term we use, both of us I think used before, is willing to go. Who says that we as the boss gets to choose whether somebody works for us can go or not? We can't control their lives. They get to decide that.
And that's a profound idea in the book and that you've just mentioned, which is the idea that, you know, I think really great leaders have a sense as to what they can control and they don't try to control the things that they can't control.
And there's a huge upside to this type of approach, really, if you think about it, because you become a talent magnet. You become known as someone that helps produce some of the best talent in the marketplace, in the industry. And the best talent will always search you out and will look for you. And that's what I found with so many of the super bosses.
So let's take a step back, and I'd love for you to share some of the key attributes of super bosses, some of the things you found in your research that you've talked about in your excellent book.
So there's a whole bunch of things, but we can start with talent and how they identify talent. They don't follow the rule book, which is true for just about everything that they do. They will look for talent in unusual places. They and by that I mean not your standard place. So, for example, Bill Walsh, San Francisco 49er, former head coach of the San Francisco 49er football team, he would go searching for talent all over the place. And I give him a lot of credit for the reason why we have any African-American head coaches in the NFL today. He saw an untapped talent pool at that time, former players that happened to be African-American that had huge upsides, huge potential, and interest in coaching, had not had that opportunity before, and created a program, an internship, a fellowship, a supporting group, support group to help them get to those jobs. And in fact, the NFL has continued that, even though Bill Walsh is long gone. So looking for talent in what seems to be an unusual place in that industry is something they absolutely do. And I'll give you one other thing when it comes to talent that I found really interesting, and that's the job description. You know, classic HR says, well, let's identify, you know, our five criteria that we need. Let's go through a whole bunch of different resumes, interview the best, and then whoever gets the most check marks wins. And while, of course, that's going to happen in big organizations run by super bosses because they're just big, they will also selectively create an opportunity. If they find somebody that's really great, they'll create a job for them. They'll create it on the spot. And that's something that's really unusual.
So it's sort of similar to Jim Collins, get really good people on the bus before you kind of even figure out what it is that they're going to do.
Well, I don't know whether I'd say it's on the bus or not on the bus. It's certainly what they are. They're talent spotters. They're always on the lookout. They're like scouts. And I've talked to a lot of CEOs, a lot of senior executives about both in doing the research for the book and in the and subsequently now in the last month or so when the book has just come out. And there are a lot of people who are seeing this idea and are giving me examples of how they've created organizations of scouts where they're looking for people. You come across somebody who looks like they have great talent. Let's kind of have a conversation. Let's see if there's some potential there. And that becomes a way of life. It's not an occasional thing to do.
Do you have to be a certain size organization to be able to make that happen? You know, if you're a small organization, can you hire someone great and find space for them? Or by the nature of the size of the organization, if your focus is, you know, kind of very laser, that you may have a hard time fitting someone who's a great talent but doesn't have the particular skills that you need?
Certainly, you know, if you're very small, every single hire is ultra critical, and there's no room for any slack in the system. So I definitely can see that. But sometimes these hires that you find are people that give you a whole new way of thinking about your business, and so they represent growth opportunities themselves. It's the people that are the growth drivers. That's true, anyways, in general. So if you find somebody that has that spark, why wouldn't you want to go that way?
It's great. Now, you've identified, I mean, I think you found, if I have this number right, from what I read, 18 of these super bosses.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
It makes me think out of the universe of probably, you know, a couple of hundred million bosses that we've found 18 of these super bosses, that this is a very rare animal. And I'm kind of wondering whether that's true, whether you've just picked the 18 that are high profile that we sort of know about, and in your travels and in your research, you found lots of other super bosses, or is it really this rare to find someone who kind of fits this category of super boss?
Yeah, it's a great question, Peter. The reality is that there are super bosses up and down every organization. You can go to the middle of some big Fortune 500 company and you will find some. I didn't find them because that wasn't my research approach. I was interested in famous people that you could track, you could figure out who their proteges were, and you could really see who's had this gigantic impact in the industry. But I certainly have believed, and now I have a lot of evidence in, you know, I do a lot of book signings now, and people say, you know, who do you want to sign the book to? I ask, and they'll say, I want you to sign it to my super boss. And they're just somebody I never heard of. I don't even know the company half the time. So super bosses exist everywhere in organizations. I think we don't have nearly enough, but it's not 18, that's for sure. It's a pretty significant number. We need to find them, we need to know who they are, and we need to celebrate them.
You know, you articulate a number of, you mentioned it as counterintuitive, but it's also talents that are in opposition to each other, meaning two things that you would think don't go together, but actually go together. On the one hand, they create great mentor apprentice relationships. On the other hand, and maybe this isn't really a great example of it, but they, you know, they're really willing to push them out the door and say fly. But there were others, and I'm not bringing.
So I'll give you. There are a whole bunch. It's really fascinating to see all these kind of counterintuitive things that they're thinking of. So one example. How do you build teams and what type of culture do you create in a team? Most people will say, well, we have a collaborative team or we have a competitive team. Where are you in that scale? And for super bosses, they throw that out the door and they say, why can't we have a team that is collaborative and competitive at the same time? And that might sound a little bit odd, but that's what they do. And I'll give you a great example. You look at Saturday Night Live and Lorne Michaels, a longtime producer, a mega super boss, to be sure, in the comedy business. And how do you get on SNL in the first place? You have to produce a skit. It's not a one-man show. It's not a stand-up comedy show. So a skit is a collaboration among performers and writers. But as the week goes on, they produce literally 2.5 hours of content. But the show is only 90 minutes. And so as you get towards the end, you got to have pretty sharp elbows to get your slot, get your skit onto that TV show. And that requires, of course, by definition, scarce resource, competition. When I talked to Lorne Michaels, he was actually very cognizant of this. He was alert to what he was creating by combining collaboration and competition. He was producing superstars by that approach.
So the super bosses are self-aware, meaning they know that they are doing things that may be counterintuitive, but that they know work.
Yes, they some are more than others. I won't say they all are. Lorne Michaels certainly was. Larry Ellison, a very, very different type of person, certainly was. But I'm not going to say all of them were self-aware. They were all self-aware in the sense that they knew they were producing tremendous talent. That was not lost on them. They knew it because, of course, there's a steady stream of people. And your proteges are coming back to tell you what you meant to them in their lives and how you helped them get to where they're getting, where they got to. So there certainly was that type of awareness.
So I look at these attributes, right? This idea that you're creating a great mentor-apprentice relationship, that this collegiality and competition, you call it the cohort effect, the adapting a job or an organization to fit great talent and an ability to spot that talent and hire it on the spot. They're very concrete things. And I you coach executives, you know what it takes to be a super boss. Why aren't there more super bosses? I'm sure you've coached some people who turn out not to be super bosses and who can't incorporate these traits, and yet they don't seem super complicated. And I think this is, in my view, the challenge of all of leadership. The challenge of leadership is to close the gap between what we know and what we do. I'm wondering, in your view, what gets in the way of people being super bosses?
Right. So there's two things to say. Number one, if you wanted to be more of a super boss and whatever you do, I could coach you and I can get you from, you know, halfway there to 3/4 or 80 or 90% there. And I know exactly how to do that. But let's say there's 1,000 of you or 10,000 of you in your company, then it's a different problem. And that problem is one of scale. And that's the primary problem that I'm working on right now. How do you scale the super boss playbook, if you will, into an organization? And what are some of the answers that we've got so far? You need to assess people. You need to know whether they are a super boss or not, or how much they are. We've developed an assessment tool that allows us to do that. And then you're able to figure out, okay, who are some of the people that are going to be allies for us as we try to make this, as you say, this type of leadership or organizational change. The other thing that's critical when we talk about scale is culture. Some cultures are more amenable. Some cultures are going to be more of a blocker. So you need to assess the culture, the people, the processes in an organization. So you got an idea of, here are some of the things that are going to help us scale the super boss playbook into the organization. Here are some of the things that are going to be problems. Let's try to figure out how to get past those problems. What are different ways to get across those barriers? So it's kind of classic change management in a way. And all those things, you know, we know a lot about how to do that. Why can't we do it?
What are some elements of a culture that makes it difficult for me to be a super boss?
Well, I think a culture that is so performance-oriented that nothing else counts, so that the people that are getting rewarded and promoted are the ones that hit the numbers, and if they had to walk over 10 different people to get there, if they had to destroy a couple of careers along the way to get there, it actually doesn't matter. Nobody's going to be worried about it. The truth is, well, that's kind of a stereotypical culture of business. The truth is, very few companies that I come in contact with really are that kind of hardcore, harsh, and narrow. Almost every organization I talk to, every leader I talk to, they, of course, you want to make the numbers. Without making the numbers and making profit and creating value, you got nothing. But they also want to make sure that they're generating and supporting the next generation of talent and helping other people get better, because that's the only way you grow. No matter how hard I work, I could only take any organization to a certain level. But if I can produce 10 SIDS and they can produce 1,000 others, it's a whole other ballgame. So those are the differentiators that you need in an organization.
What about if you're in a virtual organization, an organization that you see a lot of organizations where I'm not seeing my people right away, all the time. I'm on the phone with them a lot. They might be in different countries, different cultures. How do I you know, really kind of, how do I act as this super boss when, you know, I may actually see people who report to me five times a year?
Well, this is the modern world problem, because there's so many of these virtual offices, people living in all sorts of places. So I will say that it's a tougher nut to crack, because you don't have as much interaction, but you can still do many of the things that super bosses do. For example, you need to spend the time, and if that means getting on the plane, you do it, to know who's on your team and know them really, really well. Because what makes you tick is not necessarily the same thing that's going to make, you know, Josh tick or Willie tick or anybody else. And so we need to, as a boss, you need to know how to motivate people and what those differentiators are. You need to invest in that. So you can do that. You could do that anywhere. You need to be able to roll up your sleeves and work hand in hand with people periodically. That's not something you got to do every day, but you have to kind of step in. I mean, I had examples of super bosses that would, a CEO that would show up unannounced for a mid-level sales executive that was going to do a big sales call, and the CEO would accompany him there. And this was like, you better be ready for that. And so you can do that periodically, kind of swoop in and have that one-on-one interaction. So you can do that. And the culture itself, you know, without a strong culture in the first place, as we were talking about, it's very hard to kind of cascade and share some of these values. So I think I'm going to say it's definitely more challenging because you're not there day to day, but there's a lot you can do.
And how do you create, you know, you mentioned it a couple of times, this super boss culture. You haven't called it that specifically, but how do you create a super boss culture? Meaning if you're a leader in an organization or a few people in an organization, you really want to create a culture that predisposes, that's friendly to super bosses. How would you do that?
So you have to know what a super boss is to start. And that's why I think assessing your talent, your managers, on where they rate on the super boss scale, if you will, and what parts of that playbook or scale are they better at or worse at. And get that out in the open, and then you have a coaching issue. If it's a small number, if it's a bigger number, it's a broader challenge. But it could be done. So you want to know who's good at it, who's less good, and you want to develop a curriculum, if you will, on how to help people get better. What does that curriculum look like? It could be coaching. It could be from externally. It could be mentoring internally. It could be that a super boss does a seminar. And seminar sounds too academic, but just spends a bit of time with a group of people talking about their management, their leadership, some of the things they've done. And you want to be, as concrete as you can. So it's a grassroots approach that I'm talking about, where you're starting with who you've got. And then, of course, you could create metrics for things like this. If there's an assessment, which there is, which we've got, you can assess how people are as a super boss, and you could reward them, or I don't know whether I link compensation necessarily to that, but you could reward them with recognition, with reputation, with greater responsibility, which of course is what you'd want to do. So you could start to go through a lot of the key levers that we have in any organization to build a culture, making sure you got the right people, figuring out if you have the right people, building in the metric system, if you will, around that, and thinking about organizational processes around communication, around mentoring, around sharing, that could help you get there. And I mean, those are some of the ways you can do it.
And it's, as you say, it's change management. It's kind of creating incentives. And the incentives seem to me to be very important, because there are some natural, in a sense, short-term disincentives to being a super boss. Like what makes a super boss is someone who's willing to say goodbye and let their talent go. It's critical. It makes sense. But it's very counter, not counterintuitive maybe as much as it is counter, it feels counterproductive. Like I'm going to, my best people are going to leave. Feels like you'd have to overcome the incentive to keep them in some ways.
So, you know, the old expression, no guts, no glory, is going to apply here. This, you got to take a chance. And here's the thing I want you to keep in mind, I want everyone listening to keep in mind. You look at the amount of change that's happened throughout enterprise with digital technologies and supply chain management and marketing and sales. Every part of business has changed. What's the one part that's changed the least? Turns out to be how we manage people. Turns out how we manage talent, HR, leadership. And by the way, which is the most important part of an organization? Of course, it's the people side. So the part of an organization that is the single most important part of the organization, how we manage people, how we develop people, how we think about being a leader, is the part that's changed the least while everything around us has gone through mega innovations. Now, how could that be? Why are we still dealing with the same problems we've been dealing with 10 and 20 years ago? If that's not an argument for why we need to be willing to be a bit more innovative, And if it sounds a little scary, well, maybe we kind of baby steps and incremental steps and all the old stuff we've been doing forever, maybe that doesn't work anymore. Let's throw it out the window and do something new.
I agree 100% with you. The challenge, I think, is in actually doing it. Meaning, I think the reason management hasn't changed in part is because it's hard. It's scary. It's, you know, my the risks that I have to take in order to change in that particular way are challenging. And you know, the no guts, no glory is true. I mean, I talk a lot about emotional courage. You need courage, emotional courage. You need to be willing to feel the sadness of letting someone leave. You need to feel the insecurity of whether you can succeed without them. Like all of those things, those are sort of emotional responses that we have to those kinds of situations. You mentioned in your book that a baby step, a small step would be to be a super boss for 24 hours, you know, a day of being a super boss. What advice can you give me to do that? Let's say I want to be a super boss tomorrow. What are some steps that I could take to implement that?
So step one, figure out what it is you're doing in your team that's different than anyone else. What's your vision? What are you trying to accomplish? What is so important in that team that goes beyond just kind of checking the boxes and dotting the I's? You have to be able to convey a vision to a team at every level in an organization. It's not just about what CEOs do. Number two, and that you can do, you know, any day of the week, but let's stick to our 24 hours. Number two, make sure that you don't allow yourself to get locked up in meetings all day long. Spend some time with individuals, work with them closely, find out what they're doing. Number three, look for somebody to give a big opportunity to. This is going to be a busy 24 hours. Give somebody a big opportunity and somebody you think has that potential. And then number four, don't be afraid to kind of show up unannounced and push people and challenge people. Raise the bar on what people are doing. Don't accept just very good work. Very good work is not good enough. Excellent work is what you're trying to accomplish. And if you set that standard, people are usually going to raise their own game to meet you. So, and I can give you another 10 of them, but there's a bunch of things you can just go for it, try it, learn from it, see what works best in your culture, and then adapt and adjust and then just keep growing from that.
That's great. And I'm going to do that tomorrow and I'm going to find out. I'm going to actually take my 24 hours and do that and see in what way it impacts me and helps me to become a super boss, as I hope it does for those people who are listening. Sid Finkelstein, Super Bosses, How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. It's a book well worth reading. It got me really excited. Sid, thank you so much for being on the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you very much, Peter. Great to be on.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.